It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Well, hello, America. Hello. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned into the Second Amendment radio show. We'd like to narrow that down and call it 2A Radio. Of course, the website is 2aradio.com. All the archives are available there. Thank you again for tuning in this wonderful Sunday morning. Let's see, it's about 9 o'clock Monday morning on the West Coast, noon Eastern time. And I thank you for spending your valuable time listening to us here. A bit of a breaking story here about the Brady campaign to completely disarm all of America and leave you victims to those violent criminals throughout the United States. I think that's their official name. Where they're essentially doing a complete whitewashing of the Project Gunrunner in a new report that they have put together. Of course, their reports are actually opinionated-based things based on, piecemealed facts. Or piecemealed information, even. Well, they're out recently, this last week, with a new report about police officer slayings that, according to critics such as me, contain a virtual whitewash of the entire Project Gunrunner scandal by the ATF. The Brady Report calls revelations about the case of Project Gunrunner, quote, unconfirmed and disputed. Now, every report that Brady comes out with is both unconfirmed and disputed, but yet they still report it. They create it. Now, they're calling it unconfirmed and disputed while using the death of a Border Patrol agent linked to Project Gunrunner as a case to call for further restrictions on semi-automatic rifles and retail gun dealers. Imagine that. The ATF, which provided safe haven and an avenue for bad guys to buy guns and then ran a protection racket for them to run them south of the border. One of those guns killed a Border Patrol agent. Now, Brady campaign's looking for restrictions. The federal government provided that gun, provided it into the hands of the criminal that killed the cop. Well, this report, it headlined "Officers Gun Down," is what it said. It says, "How weak gun laws put police at risk." Great. And it briefly touches on the slaying of Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent Jaime Zapata in February and Customs Border Protection agent Brian Terry the December prior to that. In its discussion, of the Zapata murder in northern Mexico with the gun linked to the Texas-based gunrunner suspect, the report only says that the gun was purchased in Texas. Well, there's really not much more detail. However, I've given it to you. But the key outrage is that the report says that this is about Terry's slaying. This is what it says. Two of the guns recovered at the scene of Agent Terry's murder were part of a Phoenix-based sting operation targeting major Mexican drug trafficking organizations. The shooting has, engineered controversy as it alleges that the federal prosecutors and ATF permitted nearly 2,000 guns to be purchased and retained by suspected straw purchasers in hopes that a major case could be brought. While the truth of these allegations are disputed and unconfirmed, it is undisputed that if firearms laws were stronger by prohibiting multiple sales and requiring responsible sales purchases, these gun sales could not have been legally completed. That's what Brady says. It is undisputed that if firearms laws were stronger by prohibiting multiple... These gun dealers called the ATF and said, look, we're a little concerned about all these guns going to these guys. What did ATF said? Let them go. Let it ride. Well, of course, almost immediately after this report, John Richardson at the Lawyers Guns and Money website issued a bristling rebuttal in which he pointed out directly to investigative reports by CBS News, also National Gun Rights Examiner, and other independent bloggers and media hosts, such as myself. The Brady campaign cannot possibly feign ignorance of the serious allegations against ATF officials, as he says, as did Attorney General Eric Holder. They cannot feign ignorance of the allegations. They can't do it by the whistleblowers within their own organizations, by the gun dealers who said, hey, we called them, including those at Carter's Country in Houston, Texas, that they tried to raise alarms but were told by ATF higher-ups to let the guns walk. That was in the Jaime Zapata case. And, of course, recent document revelations by Senator Charles Grassley and Congressman Daryl Issa clearly show that the gun dealers were concerned about the multiple gun purchases by the gunrunner suspects. Now, here's what was said about the Brady campaign report. The authors of this study by the Brady campaign are engaging in willful denial of the facts. To try to blame it on weak gun laws and irresponsible gun dealers is to whitewash the complicity of ATF managers in allowing these guns to walk. Frankly, it's the authors of this study who are being irresponsible. The Brady campaign uses these reports to regulate their long-standing political agenda, which is far less to do with protecting the safety of law enforcement officers than it does with pushing its trophy legislation through Congress. This is the Brady campaign's agenda. We need common sense gun laws that make it harder for dangerous people to get deadly weapons. Policy solutions to help reduce the bloodshed against law enforcement and the communities include banning the sale of assault weapons and assault clips that turn firearms into weapons of war, closing the gun show loophole that allows gun sales without background checks to dangerous criminals, enacting one handgun per month restrictions that limit bulk sales of handguns to straw buyers and gun traffickers, strengthen federal law to allow felony prosecutions of gun dealers who knowingly sell to straw purchasers buying guns for traffickers, repealing gun industry protections that make it harder for law enforcement to do their job by protecting corrupt gun sellers, including repealing the so-called Protection of the Law of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act that shields gun dealers from civil liability for supplying criminals with guns, and repealing the Tyhart Amendment that hinders the BATFE ability to inspect, sanction, and shut down rogue gun dealers. Has nothing to do with preventing gun violence. Has to do with taking guns out of the hands of you and me and everyone else you see out there. Stay tuned, guys. More coming after the break.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. In the midst of this entire Project Gunwalker scandal, Judge Andrew Napolitano interviews Special Agent Jay Dobbins of the ATF, talking specifically about Project Gunwalker. Listen to this.
You last week with Senator Charles Grassley on how the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives agents allegedly sold firearms to criminals. And two of these weapons were recovered at the murder scene of U.S. Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. Here on this outrage is an ATF agent who blew the whistle on the ATF's bad conduct. He's also the author of No Angel, My Harrowing Undercover Journey to the Inner Circle of the Hell's Angels. Jay Dobbins. Jay, it's a pleasure. Welcome to Freedom Watch.
Judge, thank you for having me.
You are still currently an agent of the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and yet you're willing to come on national television and explain this Operation Gunrunner. Why are you doing that, and briefly, what happened with Operation Gunrunner? What did the ATF do or permit to be done?
Well, I'm speaking out against the agency because there's a handful of people who've displayed the courage to call out the corrupt and deceitful nature of the management of ATF. And what happened in Gunrunner is that a violation of our mandate took place. We are told by Congress to stand in the way of violent crime and to prevent guns from getting into the hands of criminals. And during Gunrunner, ATF did exactly the opposite of that and armed the enemy.
And what was the reason for which federal agents armed the enemy and knowingly allowed weapons to travel from the U.S. into the hands of dangerous Mexican gangs?
Well, to begin with, it was a ridiculous plan developed at the highest levels of ATF, and they're doing it trying to beef up their own position with regards to crime guns. And in doing so, they were letting guns go into Mexico to track where those guns were ending up. And that plan, the flawed plan, resulted in the deaths of hundreds of Mexican citizens and the death of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry.
Is this sort of like a volunteer fireman who starts a fire so that he can report the fire and be a hero for putting the fire out, but the fire gets out of control and destroys the property he's supposed to be saving or kills the people he's supposed to protect?
Well, you know, I'll tell you how ridiculous it is. You know what? I was shot and run over trying to apprehend suspects who had gotten their hands on ATF-owned guns. That's how serious ATF is supposed to take our weapons that we possess, getting into the hands of suspects. That's the extreme levels we went to. I spilled blood for this agency trying to make sure that suspects don't get crime guns. And in Gunrunner, the exact opposite policy took place.
You are still in the ATF. What has happened to you as a result of your whistleblowing, or what is likely to happen to you as a result of this interview?
Neither one is good. I've had 8 years of death and violence threats that were ignored by the administration. My house was burned down in 2008. That was ignored by the administration. And there's a historical and institutional policy at the ATF to retaliate against anybody that wants to tell the truth. So this won't be good for me personally, but the truth has to get out.
Are there other ATF agents like you willing to blow the whistle on this fellow William Bill Newell or his assistant George Gillett and whoever these people were that concocted this Operation Gunrunner?
Absolutely. Several have stepped forward. Many, literally hundreds, are standing on the sidelines watching this, pulling for the success of it. And Newell and Gillett are exactly the people that were responsible for ignoring the threats against me. And the president and the attorney general are aware of the conclusions that those guys operate ATF's business in a reckless and dangerous way, and they did nothing about it.
Why is it that you think the president is doing nothing about it, and the attorney general actually claimed he knew nothing about it?
You know, when the president came into office, he demanded transparency in government. And there is no transparency on this. Why is DOJ denying Senator Grassley and Congressman Issa the documents that they need to seek the truth? Why is that being denied if there's a demand for transparency in government?
Jay Dobbins, you're a courageous guy. Please come back and visit with us again. Good luck in this crusade.
Very interesting interview. And this agent is confirming all kinds of stuff that we've been talking about here on the show for months. All the ATF is doing right now is they are working as the patsies for the Obama regime. In as far as they've wanted to, in collusion with the chief Mexican president, Felipe Calderon, they've wanted to have his collusion and saying, yes, we have all these drug violence here in Mexico because of all the illegal guns coming across from America. The whole 90% of the guns recovered at Mexican crime scenes come from the United States. Lie. When in fact it's less than, it's 12.6%. And of those 12.6%, over 90% of those come from State Department authorized and State Department broker deals to get into the hands of Mexican military, Mexican government agencies, things such as that. And then through the corruption in Mexico, they end up in the hands of the cartels. Very, very few actually go across the border. So, and the ones that did, that they actually found, 2007, 2008, the percentage of American guns that actually went across were an average of 14 years old. Hardly any sort of an effort going on to massively supply these drug cartels with guns bought from American gun shops. Full of holes, full of lies, full of deceit, full of garbage. So, here's the way I see it. The Obama regime wants to win a second term. In that second term, they want to go after your guns, my guns, our guns. Because when it comes down to it, Obama's not afraid of executive orders. He is not afraid of giving emergency powers to groups such as the ATF or the FBI. Or for that matter, the NSA. Now, with all this information out there, why did Project Gunwalker, as he was calling it Gunrunner, which is more appropriate, why did that particular project exist? What it was, okay, we identify these guys as guys who purchase guns. We're going to make it easy for them to purchase guns. We're going to tell the gun dealers to sell the guns. Then we're going to run a protection racket. We're going to provide protection, safe haven, for them to get to the border and across it with these guns. Then when these guns are uncovered and found at crime scenes in Mexico, we'll be able to say, look, here's all the guns that went from American gun stores. We can trace them from American gun stores to Mexico through straw purchasers into the hands of drug cartels. Look, they're littering the streets. They have cost hundreds, if not thousands, of lives in the last couple of years. So when this becomes a hot-button topic, in about 2 years, during the second phase of the Obama regime, if they get it, what happens then? They go after our guns. That's exactly what Project Gunwalker / Gunrunner has been input for. To have the ATF supply guns through their own straw system into the hands of the violent criminals in Mexico so that they can take away your guns and mine. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio are back.
Welcome back from the break. You know, it's interesting, the two locales that were the subject of the two major Second Amendment decisions out of the Supreme Court, District of Columbia and City of Chicago in the state of Illinois, they were the ones that were the catalyst for having these suits brought, Supreme Court ruling in the favor of the plaintiffs against the City of Chicago, against Washington, D.C., and making it across the board nationally, from sea to shining sea throughout the land. Anti-gun laws are unconstitutional, up to the point of the ruling. Well, the state of Illinois doesn't really care, not the legislators. Because Illinois is the only state left in the union with absolutely no provision whatsoever for citizens to be able to carry guns for self-protection, either open or concealed. None. In direct violation of both the Heller and McDonald decisions. Recently, just as last week, the Illinois House voted to reject passing the concealed carry bill that would have allowed concealed weapons permits and trained individuals in Illinois to carry a gun on or near them whenever they liked. People feel a natural need to protect themselves and their families, which is why the second constitutional amendment really provides for the understanding that citizens have the right to keep and bear arms. The Second Amendment doesn't grant us a permission. It doesn't give us a right. It recognizes a God-given right. However, there does not seem to exist any sort of constitutional amendment granting the power to government to limit the usage or ownership of private guns. Not at all. Matter of fact, it's prevented in the last four words of the Second Amendment: shall not be infringed. Now, convinced of the idea that more guns will equal more violence overall, advocates of gun control look at past social patterns in states that allow gun ownership. They emphasize that as gun ownership increases, so does homicide. But it's important to consider whether increasing gun ownership causes increased homicides or if it's the other way around. It all breaks down to two aspects: the willingness of citizens to protect themselves and the notion that individual mishaps should not have national or, in the case of Illinois, statewide consequences. With the capability of individuals to carry guns, coupled with the proper permits and training, or simply the common sense citizens' overall safety and their overall willingness to get training on their own in places such as the constitutional carry states, Arizona, Alaska, Vermont, the permission to carry a gun, or rather the ability to carry a gun, more so the way it should be, they grant both power and responsibility. Some people are afraid that granting people with this power in a state like Illinois will encourage more and easily provoked gun violence. Now, the comfort may lie within the realization that firearms do not need to actually be used in order to gain a desired effect. Some oftentimes argue that the availability of concealed carry in places of high crime rates, like Chicago, for example, will just aid in the ease of criminals obtaining and using guns. Of course, that's a ridiculous argument we've blown apart on this show many times. Bluntly and honestly, criminals will acquire the weapons they wish to use regardless of any regulations or laws that are on the books. They're criminals, for God's sake. But what about the terrible tragedies like at Columbine and Virginia Tech? Obviously, guns were already not allowed on the campuses in which these shootings took place, but the aggressors brought the weapons anyway, so a concealed carry law, or lack thereof, would have really had no effect at all. However, what would have had an effect would be the possibility that other individuals at the scene had guns as well. Think about how many fewer people would have died in either of those situations if others had the means to stop the shooter before harming anybody other than the first person who was hit by the first bullet. Now, some argue against guns in schools because of how difficult it would be to regulate at-school crime. Right. But if guns aren't allowed and the legislation passes, what about accidental gun presence on campus? For example, should someone be punished because they're carrying a gun while simply passing through campus in a car or walking or riding on a bicycle or motorcycle? Especially campuses like DePaul's Loop and Lincoln Park campuses in Illinois, it would be difficult to determine an aggressor from an innocent bystander at that point. This dilemma aside, there is time for people to realize that the true problems that individuals face, fear and the willingness to surrender to any force that reduces fear, sometimes jeopardizing their rights and liberties in the process. Remember, as Benjamin Franklin that said it best, those who sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither. Overall, concealed carry might be just what Illinois, including Chicago, needs to dissolve the walls of fear that keep everyone there in their homes at night behind locked doors. Because of the Illinois House voting down the concealed weapons permit, the Second Amendment Foundation filed a lawsuit against the Illinois self-defense ban. That was Illinois House Bill 148, just so you know, which was a CCW permitting piece of legislation. Well, here's a predictable bit of gloating from Paul Helmke of the Brady Bunch. Brady campaigned to screw all America out of being able to protect themselves against violent criminals. I believe that's their official name. He says, the Illinois House of Representatives yesterday rejected a bill, HB 148, that would have allowed all sorts of individuals to carry loaded hidden handguns in Illinois communities and on the streets of cities from Chicago to Cairo. We congratulate the Illinois State House for seeing through the rhetoric and focusing on the real-life dangers of pushing loaded, hidden guns into sensitive public places. We also want to thank Governor Patrick Quinn, Attorney General Lisa Madigan, and Illinois gun violence prevention advocates for their strong opposition to the legislation. Well, Paul, you might want to keep the cork on the champagne bottle for now, because the Second Amendment Foundation is fighting back in the courtroom. One thing I absolutely love about the Second Amendment Foundation, they fight in court. They don't tend to fight at the legislative level. They tend to fight at the judicial level, where the buck stops there. Now, the lawsuit alleges that Illinois statutes that completely ban the carrying of handguns for self-defense are inconsistent with the Second Amendment. Joining Second Amendment Foundation are two private citizens, Michael Moore of Champaign and Charles Hooks of Percy, Illinois. Named as defendants are Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan, State Police Superintendent Patrick Keene, and Second Amendment Foundation is represented by attorneys David Jensen and David Siegel. And of course, the lawsuit was filed in the Central District Court of Illinois. More about this when we return. Stay tuned. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back from the break, everyone. We are continuing on with the story about the Second Amendment Foundation filing a lawsuit against those in the Illinois state government for their anti-gun laws. Now, with the Supreme Court having already ruled in the Heller and McDonald cases that the right protected by the Second Amendment is a right of individuals and one that must be honored by states and local governments, anti-gun lobby groups have been reduced to protesting that those cases only found constitutional protections for keeping of arms in the home. Well, that's true as far as it goes, in the home and everywhere else. You have to remember, Justice Scalia wrote in the Heller decision, which is incorporated in McDonald, open carry of loaded handguns is legal throughout the nation. Now, unfortunately for these anti-gun groups, and fortunately for the rest of America, the Second Amendment protects not only the right to keep arms, but to bear them as well. The gun control group's allies on the federal bench, and they seem to have more than a few of them, will presumably be hard-pressed to master the mental gymnastics required for an argument that keep, as part of keep and bear, is an individual right. But the bear part isn't? What? By completely banning both concealed and open carry for private citizens, the government of Illinois has demonstrated its utter contempt for the Constitution and Illinois citizens whose rights that entire document called the Constitution guarantees. Now, Seattle gun rights examiner Dave Workman, he has more. He says, Second Amendment sues Illinois over prohibition on self-carry. Here's what he says. Pardon me. In other Illinois gun rights news, we have also had Illinois' House Bill 3500 to protect the confidentiality of firearms owners, the firearm owner identification card, the FOID cards. As we last discussed, we need for such legislation to become apparent when Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan ruled that the state police must release that data. Really? That they must release it as requested by Associated Press, who asked for it. Why? They wanted to write a What Illinois Celebrities Are Armed article. Seriously? Are there any celebrities in Chicago other than maybe the outgoing Chicago's Mayor Daley, who, by the way, we can jump up and down. 2 days left. He leaves Tuesday in 2 days. He's scheduled to retire from office Tuesday. And he remains a monumental hypocrite to the bitter end. And to his request for publicly financed armed bodyguards proves it. Daley prepares to leave office. Right? And he is the most vehement anti-gun Democrat leftist scumbag there is. Shoulder to shoulder with Michael Bloomberg. For years, Daley's had armed bodyguards protecting him. At the same time, he's worked fanatically to deprive his Chicago constituents of, and every other citizen, of the same level of security by pushing every crazy, senseless anti-gun scheme he or his colleagues could possibly dream up. Now he wants the same privilege to carry into retirement. Here's a quote. Despite the city's loss before the U.S. Supreme Court last year in McDonald v. Chicago, the landmark case won by the Second Amendment Foundation, Daley has continued to throw every roadblock possible in the path of law-abiding citizens who want to exercise their Second Amendment rights. This came from Alan Gottlieb. They only want to feel the same sense of safety that Daley has enjoyed at their expense for years. If Daley wants armed bodyguards, continues Gottlieb, then he needs to pay for them out of his own pocket. If one penny of public money is spent for Daley's security, it will be an outrage. Gottlieb said it is disgusting for Daley to expect a different level of treatment than any other private citizen. Once he leaves public office, he should lose every perk. And that should start with losing his armed security team. Richard Daley is living proof that liberal anti-gun arrogance, or of liberal anti-gun arrogance. Stand by. Sorry, guys. I'm having a sneezing fit. And I'm trying to curb it. One moment. That's terrible radio. The mic button is muting my sneezing. I don't know what it is. Gottlieb continues by saying, the man has devoted himself to disarming law-abiding citizens, leaving them to the mercy of inner-city thugs who habitually disobey Chicago's gun laws. If he truly believes that guns are bad, then he would drop his request and take his chances with 911 like all the rest of the people whose rights he's trampled. So here's Daley's request. This is what he wants. He wants to keep his armed bodyguard contingency at the expense of the city of Chicago. So the city of Chicago should pay for the former mayor's armed security team 24/7. Now, why does he need armed thugs when we can't protect ourselves with guns in Chicago? Why is that? Well, it's called hypocrisy. It's called elitism. Now, he's not the first Mayor Daley. His father was as well. And when his father was in charge of Chicago for what, 26 years or something? Is that what it was? 26 years? Anti-gun. Absolutely running the city into the ground and allowing crime wave after crime wave to come through at the street level. You guys remember the whole story about Chicago organized crime? These are the kinds of guys that would have loved them. These Daleys would have loved these guys. They would have been part of it, as they are. It was Father Daley who, on his own, of manipulation, changed the outcome of one presidential election. Because the Daleys are scumbags. Richard M. Daley, on his way out of office, is a scumbag. He wants to keep the armed thugs that protect him. Now, this is the same guy that pointed a rifle at a reporter and asked him, how would he like it if he were to take that rifle, shove it up the reporter's backside, and pull the trigger? This is the mayor of Chicago. So, we know we're dealing with somebody who's a loon. Total kook. Total loon. Off his rocker. Of course, he wants to keep the guns. He wants to keep his armed security contingent because 911 isn't good enough for him. It's good enough for everybody else but him. And probably a few of his buddies. Right? Probably a few of his buddies as well. And he's asking for this to be indefinite, to keep these guys. Now, even today, the President of the United States only gets Secret Service for 10 years after they leave office. Bill Clinton is the last president to get armed protection, Secret Service protection for life. George W. Bush, he's the first person to get Secret Service protection for only 10 years after he leaves office. He's got 8 years left, a little under that. So, let's see how this goes. If Obama wins re-election, he's going to go after our guns hard and fast through legislation, through executive order, and through giving dicta down to ATF, FBI, NSA, anybody else he can come up with. Certainly Customs and Border Protection, everybody. He's going to give dicta down the line to restrict guns, take guns, keep guns from coming into the country. as well as magazines, ammunition, ammunition limits, all of that will happen. But it'll also probably work very solidly to make it to where he can get Secret Service protection for life. If he doesn't, maybe he can just move in with Daley when he goes back to Chicago. Because Daley will probably get it. Who's replacing Daley? Obama's former chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel. How's this going? How's this looking? It stinks. It stinks like the inner city of Chicago. It stinks like Chicago's South Side, which is rotting with corpses due to all of the violent criminals that have guns. And the corpses are oftentimes, unfortunately, that of innocent victims who are caught in the crossfire because they're not able to have guns because of the unconstitutional laws both in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago. They are still flying the bird in the face of the Heller decision and the McDonald decision. Stay tuned, guys. Got a special guest coming in for the beginning of Hour 2. We'll be right back right after the break. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. We have special guest Dave Champion in studio. Dave, welcome.
Hey, Bill. Nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
It's been a while since we've been on the air together. It's normally always on your show.
True. And it's been a while since we've actually hung out together because you've been busy. I've been busy.
Yeah.
This is nice. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for coming in. It is the weekend, and usually we have opposite schedules. You're here in the studio during the week, and now I'm in here on the weekend, so we're always crossing paths in an occasional text message, it seems.
But this is for a good cause.
It is.
We get to talk about anti-gun morons, so this is for a very good cause that I'm here this weekend.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, this particular anti-gun moron stems from a case in Wisconsin. Now, Wisconsin has traditionally not had any concealed weapons permits. They have a law in the books that will take effect later this year. I think it's in July, I believe.
Which adds that requirement?
Which, what it does is now that they'll be able to get concealed weapons permits.
Oh, so you're telling me it's been... I'm not familiar with Wisconsin law, so you're telling me it has essentially been illegal to carry a concealed firearm in any way, shape, or form in Wisconsin?
Yes. Wisconsin and Illinois have had absolutely no provision for carrying concealed. Wisconsin just passed the law, so that will take effect a little bit later this summer.
Okay.
However, it's an open carry state.
Is it shall issue or may issue?
No, it's going to be a shall issue.
All right. But they have open carry.
They have open carry, and they always have. Even though...
Cops don't know about it.
Well, the cops are directed by the wrong guys. The mayor of Milwaukee actually said, I've told my troops, as he said, not the mayor, I'm sorry, it was the police chief. He said a couple years ago, we talked about this once, I've told my troops, his cops, if they see somebody packing to take them down, take their gun away and hook them up, then we'll decide if they have the right to carry a gun. How about that? I see this. You guys can't see the look on Dave's face. It's blank. It's like...
I'm trying to decide whether what's in my mind is prosecute him in federal court or bullet to the head, and I think I'm good with either. Really, I think I probably prefer one over the other.
I see where you're coming from with this.
Needs to be some punishment for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, but the fervor in Wisconsin has been with these open carry advocates, and last fall we have five guys that go to a restaurant, a lady. Sees these guys, they're carrying guns, they're exposed. They're not causing any problems. She gets in her car, she calls the cops and says to the cops, there's guys carrying guns in the restaurant. So, and I actually played the audio tape from this. I played the 911 call.
Is this the one where the 911 operator says to her, well, that's not illegal in Wisconsin? She says, well, in that case, never mind. Was that
call? That's exactly the one.
Oh, okay.
But the cops show up anyhow.
Well, that's because the 911 operator, even after the gal said, oh, never mind then, I didn't know, I thought it might have been illegal. After she said, never mind, now that I know it's legal, the 911 operator said, I'm going to dispatch officers anyway.
That's exactly what
happened. Even after everybody on that call was clear, there was no violation of law. Nothing cognizable by law enforcement whatsoever. The 911 operator said, I'm going to roll officers anyway.
And what did the officers do when they got there?
They immediately walked up to the table and demanded identification.
Yes, and they ended up citing them for disturbing the peace.
Which they were, because they were eating.
Evidently.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe they needed toothpicks, there was too much food in their grill, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, as it turns out, that case was dismissed.
I'm shocked.
Imagine that.
By the way, let's tell the audience, by the way, in almost every single jurisdiction in this country that has ever looked at the issue of whether peaceably wearing a sidearm is disturbing the peace, every single court, bar none, have determined that it cannot, peaceably carrying a firearm cannot sustain a disturbing the peace charge. Every single jurisdiction that's looked at it has ruled that way.
And let's add insult to injury. The Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin issued an opinion before this.
Yes.
A year before this.
Saying exactly
that said exactly the same thing.
I remember now.
Now, here's a letter to the editor.
I prefer letter to
letter.
The
editor. Out of some guy named David Searles from Broadhead, Wisconsin, that says the following. I'm very disappointed that the Madison City Attorney's Office dismissed the charges against the gun-toting nuts. This concerned the five handgun-toting nuts who entered a Culver's restaurant last fall in Madison to order a meal. A customer called the police, and the police issued citations to the five men for disturbing the peace. The handgun nuts claim what they did was legal. People were afraid, disturbed, and upset by these nuts widely wearing handguns. Therefore, they disturbed the peace. Nowhere in the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution does it state that handgun nuts have a right to carry, concealed or open, a handgun. According to the amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. The militia, now known as the National Guard, is responsible for maintaining the security of a free state of the people, not gun nuts carrying handguns. I have no problem with rifles and shotguns for hunting. Only law enforcement and licensed private detectives, investigators, and/or security personnel should be allowed to carry a handgun. Anyone else who believes they need to carry a handgun, concealed or open, is just plain nuts and/or paranoid. Statistics concerning crime declining in states with concealed and/or open carry laws are from pro-gun organizations and are fudged to make their point. In reality, concealed and/or open carry laws have had no effect on cutting crime. In fact, crime concerning guns have gone up in some cases, mainly for illegal use of guns. Any politician who supports concealed and/or open carry is just as nuts as the pro-gun nuts. David Searles, Searles, Broadhead, Wisconsin. Now, Dave, I am at a loss of where to even start tearing this guy's argument apart. It's really baffling to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Where to start? It's like you go through, if you were to make a bullet list of the points he's trying to bring out, every single one fits into one of two categories. Either it is statistically totally inaccurate, or he has no idea what the law says.
Absolutely right.
There's nothing correct or accurate in a single thing he said.
Not a one. As a matter of fact, the Second Amendment to the Constitution was ratified in 1783, correct?
I believe so.
Okay. The National Guard came about in, what was it, 1900s.
Right.
Well over 100 years, 120 years or so, after the Constitution was ratified, Second Amendment was in. So to say that the National Guard is a well-regulated militia is absolutely incorrect. And that's been ruled upon by the Supreme Court.
Well, things like guys like this moron, what's his name, Searles?
Searles.
Guys like him, it doesn't matter what you say, because I assure you that somebody has straightened this guy out on all these facts at some point in history. And like any good, committed leftist who is mentally ill, by the way, since your audience doesn't necessarily hear this from you, I want to make sure that I'm clear about this. On the Dave Champion Show, the accurate, factual medical condition is spoken of all the time. Leftists have a diagnosable mental illness. One of the attributes of that illness is that when they are exposed to the facts, they won't argue against them. They will remain silent. Because they can't. I mean, if you show them something that's an absolute fact, and they can't argue against it because it is a provable fact, then what they do is they walk away, and the next morning they get up and they go sit down with people and they repeat what was just proven to them to be a lie.
Make you want to engrave it on a bat and beat them over the head with it.
Or tattoo it on their forehead.
There you go. Folks, stay tuned. We got more on this after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, with Dave Champion sitting in right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Again, Bill Carnes, your host, sitting in with me, joining Dave Champion with the Dave Champion Show. Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you.
We are tearing apart this... this anti-gun mental case, David Searles of Broadhead, Wisconsin.
By the way, I do want to comment one thing about the militia. His comment that it's the National Guard, your observation, the National Guard did not exist at the time the Second Amendment was created. Virtually every single founding father who has ever written on what the militia is has said, and I'm paraphrasing, we can break it down to its fundamental, which is it is the entire body of able-bodied Americans armed. How Sears can take that summation of all the founding father statements, it is the all able-bodied people in the United States who are armed. And by the way, it's, of course, by state. It's the state's militias.
Yes.
Okay. So every able-bodied person in Arizona with a gun, every able-bodied person in, I hate to say this, California with a gun, every able-bodied citizen in Oklahoma with a gun, how Sears can take that description and turn it into the National Guard, only somebody who is mentally ill could make that transition and pretend even that it's credible.
And absolutely completely ignorant on it, keep bashing my microphone here as I turn to look at you, because the fact that this guy probably has no idea, I shouldn't say the fact, the realization that this guy has no idea what the hell he's talking about, because I doubt he's ever read a single word in any of the Federalist Papers, which is essentially a guide to understanding the Constitution.
Oh, I'm sure if it doesn't come from a leftist website, he's not interested.
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah, one of those...
You can tell he has drank the leftist Kool-Aid.
Yes, and of course, every time he talked about someone with a gun, they're a nut.
Yeah, basically these are speaking points from the Brady campaign.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Brady campaign to completely screw every American out of being able to defend themselves against a violent criminal.
Yes,
I think that's their official name.
When I refer to the Brady campaign on my show, I don't refer to it as an anti-gun organization. I refer to it as an organization that opposes the right of self-defense.
Which is exactly what the Violence Policy Center, all of them, what they claim is they want to have sensible gun laws on the books.
Which, of course, is a euphemism for only police and military can have guns.
Exactly.
That's sensible in their mind.
It is. And I have to tell you something.
Oh, but I think you can probably own a 12-gauge for bird hunting.
Yeah, because the Second Amendment says something about hunting and sporting.
That purpose. Is clearly the intent of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, and as we also know, that the ATF is now looking to ban importation of certain semi-automatic shotguns because they don't meet the sporting uses clause of the Gun Control Act of 1968.
Gee, I wonder which semi-automatic shotgun they're really after.
So, with the Gun Control Act of 1968, if we look at the decisions in both Heller and McDonald, that is basically an entirely unconstitutional piece of legislation, as well as the National Firearms Act of 1934. But now what we need to do is we need to get groups like Second Amendment Foundation or something like that to start arguing these things in court, because otherwise ATF is just going to do whatever the hell Obama and his scumbag Attorney General Eric Holder tell him to do.
Yeah, let me give your audience a place where they can go to read what the federal firearms laws are really limited to. And when we talk about having people like the Second Amendment Foundation, Gun Owners of America, NRA.
Don't have to say.
Yeah, I'm sorry. when we talk about having them supporting lawsuits, I'd like your audience to be able to know what the law really says, because Americans, just like they're socialized that everybody has to pay the income tax, they're socialized that these federal laws concerning firearms apply to the citizens of the 50 states. And it's really significant if you look back at the history and development of the law and what the statutory definitions are and where the laws first appeared and then what they were moved to obfuscate their true limited role. It's fascinating, and it's enlightening and liberating. So if you want to know more about this, go to www.originalintent, all one word, originalintent.org, not com, .org, and then click on education. You'll see four big portals there. One of them is titled education. Click on that. You'll see a topical index on the left. Choose the treatise that says federal firearms law, and you will be fascinated, floored, and appalled at what the federal government is doing, given what the law really says.
Now, Dave, give us, we got about 4.5 minutes left in this segment. Give us just a little bit of a teaser to really try and get the listeners to want to go to originalintent.org and check this out.
Oh, well, there's a couple of things. First of all, the federal government uses the phrase state in an entirely different way than Americans are socialized to use it. For instance, when we say state, we mean places like Arizona and Nevada and so forth. In federal law, normally when they use the term state, they mean one of two things. They mean the what are called states of the United States, which is not the states of the Union, which is why they don't call it states of the Union. States of the United States are foreign nations that are under the control of the United States.
Such as Puerto Rico?
Such as Puerto Rico, such Guam. As Guam, the Virgin Islands. These are all sole independent sovereign nations that, due to our victory in war, we have been, for instance, when Puerto Rico is a great example, okay, we won the Spanish-American War. We got, as part of the Treaty of Peace, we got Puerto Rico. It belongs to the United States. For instance, Nevada, Wisconsin, New York, Florida, they do not belong to the United States government because they created the United States government. But these other places do belong to the United States government, and they are phrased exactly that way in federal law. Because they are independent sovereigns, if we did not have legal slash military control over them, okay. For instance, the Virgin Islands is not free to disassociate itself with the United States. Guam is not free to disassociate itself with the United States. If it tried to do that, we would use our military to keep it in place. Okay. So what they do is they use state in an entirely different way. The way I illustrate this is we have the United States Department of State, right?
Sure.
It has nothing to do with states of the Union. The United States Department of State deals with what?
Foreign nations.
Which are referred to as? States.
States, yes.
A state in law is a sovereign enterprise. Okay? So when the United States says, it uses the term state and says, means states of the United States, it doesn't mean the states of the Union. But unless you've studied law, unless you're skilled on how statutes are written and the rules of statutory construction, how would you know? That's just one example of the many points that are revealed in the treatise on federal firearms law at originalintent.org.
Well, that is fantastic. And you know what's going to be interesting is on next week's show, probably going over a lot of the different emails we're going to get. By the way, guys, if you want to send your emails, it's bill@2aradio.com. Just go to the website. There's links on there. It's going to be interesting to see the sort of comments that we get back on that after people actually read this and educate themselves from originalintent.org. There's fantastic stuff on that site. I've gone through there many times and looked at all types of information on original intent, which again is the intent, the original intent of the founding fathers, what they're actually looking at, and the way that the government was formed around it, and what we have in practice and in law.
Can I tell you, I've that treatise has been provided by many of my listeners to attorneys that deal with firearms issues. You know what the feedback has been?
Tell me.
Zero.
Really?
No criticism. How can you criticize what is? Okay, you would think they would get excited about it and say, we didn't know this. We didn't know this history. We didn't know that it started out in the title on interstate commerce and then got moved to Title 18 federal criminal offenses. We didn't know about the various parts that have been omitted. Not that they've been repealed, omitted. They simply are no longer printed as part of the law, but they're still operative. Okay, you would think that would be very exciting to an attorney who deals with firearms issues.
You would think.
Not a peep out of any of them who have ever read it. They refuse to comment.
Imagine.
Yeah.
You can understand now where a lot of the attorney jokes come from. It just works out that way. Dave, thanks for coming by today.
Hey, Bill, thanks for having me. It's been great.
I appreciate it. It's good to see you on the weekend, man.
All right, buddy.
All right. Folks, stay tuned. There's going to be plenty more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back. Now, of course, the two landmark Supreme Court cases upholding the Second Amendment's individual right to keep and bear arms and limiting what any and all governments within these United States can do about it were the Heller decision, Heller versus District of Columbia, citing specifically the anti-gun policies of Washington, D.C., as well as McDonald versus City of Chicago, which, of course, taking on the anti-gun policies of the City of Chicago. Well, it's been 3 years since the Supreme Court struck down the nation's toughest gun control laws in Washington, D.C., but a de facto ban has taken effect ever since the city's only firearms dealer stopped registering guns. Why? Well, there's no gun shops in Washington. City residents who wish to legally possess a handgun must purchase them elsewhere and register them with Charles Skye, who charges a $125 fee. I'm sorry, Sykes is his name. Syke, S-Y-K-E, Charles Syke. But Sykes won't register any more guns until he finds another office space for his business. Now, in an interview, Sykes wouldn't say when he's moving or how long it's going to take him. He says, I'm sure the residents will know when I'm accepting new firearms again. But at least one U.S. senator has taken notice, and he's not happy about what he sees as a violation of the Second Amendment to keep and bear arms. He says, unfortunately, despite the Supreme Court ruling, the D.C. Council has done everything in its power to restrict lawful gun owners from exercising their Second Amendment rights. That comes from Senator Chuck Grassley. He says, how they go about doing that is up to them, but it's wrong that the residents of the district can't legally buy a gun and then bring it home. Grassley suggested that the city government register the guns or that owners of guns purchased legally elsewhere in the U.S. be allowed to be possessed in D.C. Now, Councilman-at-Large Phil Mendelson, who developed gun control restrictions after the Supreme Court ruling, said he's willing to consider allowing the city to register the guns, but added that, quote, it's easier said than done. The city would have to get licensed by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, of course, the federal agency, ATF, that oversees gun sales and registrations that would need to meet all of the agency's requirements. Washington's gun ban first took effect in 1976 and essentially outlawed private ownership of handguns in a city struggling with violence. Now, struggling with violence to the point, per capita, Washington, D.C. was one of the most violent and dangerous cities in the entire world. Led the U.S. more times than not as the murder capital of the United States. In 2008, the Supreme Court effectively lifted that ban. Of course, Councilman Mendelson noted that only 1,138 guns have been registered since then. Why? It's cost prohibitive. Mendelson said that's a very small market, adding that he would like to see more federal firearms license dealers. He says, I was told last week that someone else was interested and began the process of opening a shop. And I think that's unfortunate, but I don't know how we can increase the business. Now, Sykes said he is not aware of anyone else planning to open a shot, but he's not opposed to it. He says, whoever wants to get in this business, it's fine with me, he says. Once they do it, they'll see the other side. They might be able to find out why no one else has done it before. Sykes, who has another job, is selling guns in Washington. Said selling guns in Washington is not like selling iPods. He says, if you think you can stave off of selling bare minimum of guns, your eyes are going to be open pretty soon, he says. There's not much business. Well, Michelle Lane of D.C., she's the one who's tired of waiting to get her guns, so she's going to federal court. The reason? The only licensed dealer, as we talked about, Sykes, he's temporarily out of business. Federal law prohibits individuals from buying handguns in one state and transferring them to another state. That can only be facilitated by a licensed firearms dealer. Since the district has no more FFL dealers in business, the transfers are the only means for residents to buy and register their handguns. Rifles and shotguns are exempt from the law, just so you know. Now, Michelle Lane is now suing the federal government and the state of Virginia, which is where she bought her handguns and where they remain. In a complaint filed this week in federal court, Lane and a gun rights advocacy group, the Second Amendment Foundation, claim their constitutional rights have been violated. Here's a quote. These provisions not only have the effect of barring District of Columbia residents from acquiring handguns, but also generally unjustifiably frustrate and make more expensive all Americans' attempts to obtain the handguns of their choice, says the complaint. The complaint claims that the federal prohibition on individuals transferring handguns from state to state themselves violates their Second Amendment right to own a gun. The suit also alleges that the law violates the Fifth Amendment right to equal protection under the law because it discriminates based upon where an individual lives. The lawsuit also names Virginia Superintendent of State Police because Virginia law also requires gun buyers to list their state of residency. The lawsuit was filed by Alan Gura, the attorney who won the Supreme Court case that overturned the district's longtime ban on handguns. As for when Lane might be able to get her guns from the Virginia store where she purchased them several weeks ago, Charles Sykes, the lone licensed dealer in D.C., has informed the Metro Police Department and the ATF that he's found a new location and hopes to reopen as soon as possible. ATF and MPD have agreed to expedite Sykes' request for a change of address, meaning it would be just a matter of days before residents in the nation's capital can once again register handguns. And of course, the transfer fee again. This guy Sykes, his transfer fee is $125. You secure being able to purchase a gun anywhere else. Let's say you go online and you buy a gun online. Let's say you go to gunbroker.com, something like that. Auction Arms, who knows? You buy a gun. That gun needs to be sent from an FFL dealer in the state where it is now when you purchased it to an FFL dealer where you live. Then you go to that dealer, fill out your form 4473, and pick it up. That's the way everyone is looking at this. Now, as we talked about in the last segment, Dave Champion's talking about originalintent.org. Awesome stuff there, by the way. You can get lost on that site for a week because it's so fantastically filled with wonderful information. Here's the thing. We have the right to own property and do with as we please. The ATF has a regulation that says that all persons must blah da 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 da. And they also refer to the states, as Dave was talking about. So everyone believes, and in practice, they do follow along with that regulation. However, the way that the law actually reads, and in many different rulings by very high courts, including the Supreme Court, the net effect is the following. If I live in Missouri. And someone in Florida owns a gun. And I want that gun. I should be able to send money to the person in Florida and they ship the gun direct to me. The net effect of the law is that. The way it's practiced is different. So this lawsuit, hopefully, will take that into account. Stay tuned, folks. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back off, I'll take you on. Head's gonna take on anyone. I know that you are wrong if this is not where you belong.
Welcome back from the break, everyone. Now, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, that is an organization created by and financed by scumbag, idiot, anti-gun, anti-liberty, pro-violence mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City. Now, this guy is a corrupt scumbag. He served two terms as mayor of New York City, and then he wanted to serve more. So, through his corrupt practices, he paid off and bribed through different favors and things such as that and campaign donations to members of the city council to change that law so he could run for a third term and buy his way into a third term. What you can do when you have billions of dollars. He's also the only mayor who regularly testifies against guns in front of Congress. Why? All the other anti-gun scumbags who are in both houses of Congress turn to Bloomberg because they look at him as a big anti-gun billionaire scumbag, so he should be able to be heard. Of course, to get onto those lists, he donates to their campaigns. So, this is the scumbag we're dealing with. Mayor Richard Daley, who is on his way out. Thank God. 48 hours left, he's gone. Down the road, no longer mayor of the corrupt city of Chicago. He's chief corruptor. He was second in charge. He was co-chair of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Well, here's the deal. Mayors Against Illegal Guns claims 593 mayors as members of Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Of these, 399 of them, two-thirds, 67%, are in only four different states. All of them right there in that general area. New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. This is an anti-gun area. Now, listen to this. New Jersey. 40 of the city mayors in New Jersey are members of MAG. 108 mayors out of New York, 71 out of Ohio, and Pennsylvania leads the crowd. 180. Now, if you throw in California, who's pretty anti-gun, unless you get inland a bit, 21 mayors of California. And in Florida, which really surprises me because Florida is a big freedom sort of outdoorsy kind of a state. But not without their anti-gunners. 36 mayors from there. Now, that accounts for 456 of the 593 mayors, or 76% of the alleged membership. Now, there's about 8,300 mayors nationally. Now, of localities with over 30,000 citizens, we should say, at about 8,300 cities, 8,291, I believe, is the actual number, cities in America with 30,000 citizens or more. Even disregarding the fact that a fair number of Bloomberg's groups are not even included in that count due to small constituencies, that means fewer than 7.2% of the nation's mayors, agree with his goals and methods enough to allow themselves to be counted among his supporters. Now, the vast majority of states, 37 states, or 74% of the states, could produce only five or fewer members of MAG. From the mainly hundreds of mayors in each state. In fact, they couldn't even persuade a single mayor in 12 of the different states to join their conspiracy to subvert the Constitution. Now, there are, let's see, out of Virginia, right next to D.C., anti-gun. Unfortunately, Virginia, who's generally pretty pro-gun, nine mayors. Now, let's go through this. Alabama, 3. Alaska, 1. Arizona, 0. Arkansas, 2 mayors. Colorado, the entire state of Colorado, 1. State of Georgia, 5. Hawaii. Hawaii, who has a lot of anti-gun laws, still only 1 mayor. Idaho, 0. Indiana, 5. Iowa, which has had some anti-gun laws, only 2. Kansas, only 3. Kentucky, 0. Louisiana, 4. Maine, 4. Maryland, 4. And Maryland is huge anti-gun. Michigan, relatively anti-gun in the Detroit metro area. Only 3. Minnesota, only 3. Mississippi, only 3. Missouri, only 3. Montana, 0 mayors. Nebraska, 3. New Hampshire, not surprising, 0. New Mexico, 2. Nevada, where I live, 0. Then again, there's only about, I think there's only like 12 incorporated cities in the entire state of Nevada. The rest are just towns. I think there's only about 12. North Dakota, 1 mayor. Oklahoma, 0. Oregon. Now, Oregon, if you are west of the Cascades, it's pretty liberal, pretty, you know, relatively anti-gun. East of the Cascades, now we're getting to rural Oregon, much more conservative. But still, the state of Oregon, only 2. Rhode Island, 0. South Carolina, 2 mayors. South Dakota, 0. So North Dakota, South Dakota, 0. Tennessee, 3. Texas, the great state of Texas. The entire state of Texas, 2 mayors. And something tells me if the constituency knew that their mayors were part of MAG, they wouldn't be reelected. Utah, 0. Vermont, surprisingly enough, 2. West Virginia, 0. Wisconsin, 5. Now, Wisconsin has just now gotten a law where you can carry concealed. State of Wyoming, 0. So, we have mayors against illegal guns. Same sort of outfit as Brady Campaign or Violence Policy Center. The way to prevent violent crimes is the same way that President Reagan forced the fall of the Soviet Union. A very, very strong defense. A strong military. The best offense is a good defense. You've heard this, yeah? Anybody ever played sports and had your coach tell you that? The best offense is a good defense? So you don't let the other offense get ahead. If you have a weak defense, the other offense is going to score all over you. And you'll be done with. Well, here's the deal. If law-abiding, sensible Americans carried guns regularly, daily, just carry a handgun with you. You're trained to use it. You're trained when to use it. And, more cases than not, when not to use it, which is the majority of the time. Then bad guys wouldn't be bad guys because they would know every single potential victim or the vast majority, well over 50% of their intended victims were armed and knew how to use their guns. They wouldn't be criminals anymore. They certainly would not be committing any sort of a person crime, such as robbery, rape, some sort of violent attack. Those things would not exist. They would the crime rates would plummet. You'd basically be left with some sort of domestic violence. Husband, wife, wife, boyfriend, roommates, parent, child, whatever, extended family. That would essentially be where the violence is left, with domestic violence, which is where the most of it is anyhow. So carry your guns. If one of your mayors happens to be a member of MAG, look it up, go to their website. Work your tail off to get them out of office. We'll be back next week.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.